Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of Politics Today. I am your host, Aiden Cleaver, and pretty crazy stuff happening. I hope you all enjoyed the last episode with Dr. Anderson. I had a fun time. But in the week or so after that, a bunch of crazy new stuff happened. So I'm going to be talking about what the heck just happened with the tariff situation with Canada, US, and Mexico. And then we're going to talk about the election, the Ontario election that got called, that I was pretty right about my prediction. The very first episode of this show was me saying, I think that Ford's going to call an election. It's being rumored, and I think that he's probably going to try to do it. And lo and behold, he did. So first, I'm just going to start talking about the tariffs, because I think that is the craziest thing that happened over this last little while. So for a bit of context, Donald Trump has been saying that Canada, Mexico, and China, well, he's been saying the whole world, but specifically these three countries have been ripping the U.S. off, and he wants to make them pay. So he's going to put tariffs on them. Now, that's not how a tariff works. A tariff is a tax on the importer. So what that means is if an American company buys something from Canada and they want to import it from Canada into the U.S., they then have to pay a 25% tax on it. So they have to pay the 25% of whatever that costs. So if it's $100, they have to pay $25 to the government. So they have to pay then $125 to be able to import that. That's not a tax on the other government or on the exporter. It's a tax on the importer. And then what that will end up doing is raising prices for consumers. And companies even came out and said that, yeah, we're going to have to raise prices for consumers. Like Walmart, the CEO said, yeah, we're going to have to raise prices. It doesn't lower prices. It's not a tax on any other countries. It is a tax on the importer, which is then effectively a tax on the buyer and your citizens. So this whole tariff thing is kind of ridiculous and makes no sense. And a lot of people point to it being a good thing of like, oh, back in the before the 1900s, America wasn't funded by income tax. It was funded by tariffs. All right, buddy, it's 2025. It's not the 1900s anymore, or even the 1800s. Like, countries are a lot bigger, and there's a lot more essential services that have to be paid for and given. And in the U.S., I think if I'm not going to talk too much about it, because that's American politics, and I want to focus on Canadian, but I think the easiest thing for the U.S. to do if they want to pay less in tax is cut spending for really bloated things like the military. They spend way too much money on the military. They could cut their military budget in half and still have the strongest military in the world. But I'm not going to talk about that too much. Specifically, he then said he wants to put 25% tariff on all Canadian goods, 25% tariff on all Mexican goods, and a 10% tariff on China, which I don't really understand why he's punishing his ally, like the US's allies, more than China, but whatever. But then he realized that he does actually get stuff from Canada and it's going to raise costs. So he reduced it to 10% for oil and energy, because the US buys a lot of Canadian oil and energy. And he realized that and was like, oh crap. So we can't get rid of the tariff. So he lowered it to 10, but still that is going to be a problem for both Canada, but also America. I think a lot of people are acting like, oh, it doesn't matter, it's not going to affect America. Trump said that he ran on that he's going to day one lower prices, has yet to do so, has increased prices, and has said, oh, this trade war is probably going to increase prices, but it maybe won't. It's just ridiculous and crazy. But we are living in a world where that didn't end up happening. So why? What happened? Well, it was originally supposed to come on February 1st, which is my birthday. So that was a nice looming birthday present. But they were supposed to be imposed on February 1st, 25% tariff on everything Canadian and everything Mexican. The Mexican government came to a deal with the American government and said that The U.S. government will postpone the tariffs for 30 days. And in response, the American government sent 10,000 troops to the U.S.-Mexico border. And Trump is saying that this is all, he wants these tariffs, not because he actually wants to impose tariffs, but because he wants to use it as a bargaining tool. Which, again, I don't really understand, because a lot of people go back, because people say, oh, no, tariffs are good because we didn't have income tax back then, and we can get rid of income tax if we impose tariffs. But then people say that he doesn't actually want tariffs. So it doesn't really make much sense. But let's assume that he doesn't actually want tariffs and he's trying to use it to negotiate as a negotiation tactic. I don't know. It's not like it worked amazing, because to my knowledge, Mexico already had an agreement with the U.S. and Canada already had an agreement with the U.S. for something, which I will get into. So I don't know. Trump does this a lot where he'll make a problem and then solve it and then pat himself on the back. Doesn't make much sense. But anyways, we then go to Canada. How did we get out of these tariffs? Well, similar thing. We came to an agreement, and because Trump talks about fentanyl and how Canada is funneling fentanyl into the U.S., which makes really no sense. I saw a copy pasta going around, and I'll just read it out. So migrants, irregular entry in 2024 from Canada to the U.S. was 18,644. From Mexico to the U.S., 2 million. From the U.S. to Canada, 28,000. So more migrants were coming from the U.S. to Canada than Canada to U.S. But okay, let's move to fentanyl, because surely a lot of fentanyl is coming from Canada to the U.S. Seized in 2024 from Canada to the U.S., 43 pounds. From Mexico to the U.S., 21,148 pounds. And from the U.S. to Mexico, from the U.S. to Canada, 882 pounds. So he's getting mad over 43 pounds of fentanyl. Obviously, yes, that is bad. We should not have any fentanyl. But that's really not that much when you look at Mexico, which is 21,148, or the U.S., which is 882 pounds. I think you also need to worry about your citizens who are addicted to the drugs. Like, the only reason that the Mexican cartels are in business is because Americans keep buying it. So, like, yeah, you have to stop the sale of it, but also work on stopping the buying of it. And, like, not just saying you're going to lock people up and throw them in jail. Like, make programs to help people with addiction and stuff. Anyways, even illegal guns in 2024, from Canada to the U.S., 3,000. From Mexico to the U.S., 16,000. From the U.S. to Canada, 30,000. And then it says that the figures on migrant entries and fentanyl seizures supplied by U.S. Customs and Border Protection. The solution that Trudeau, because he still is our prime minister, even though he said he was resigning, the solution that they came to was that they are going to, that Canada is going to create a fentanyl czar for the border, and we're going to invest a bunch of money into, like, securing the border and whatever. A lot of people are saying, like, oh yeah, see, Trump won. He got these countries to fold. I don't think it's necessarily getting Canada to fold, because from what I understand, we already had like a program like this in place. We just have now upped the amount of money that we're spending on it. And I think it also is a good thing to try to stop illegal guns from coming into Canada. Like, I think that's a huge problem. I think the amount of illegal guns, 30,000 in 2024, that are coming into Canada is a problem. So if we can be like, yeah, see, we're doing what you want, Trump, but then in actual, we're trying to get rid of all the illegal guns, I think that'd be great. And it got the tariffs paused, whatever. But I think also Trump realized that he got all of Canada pretty much united, and everyone was like being extremely patriotic and Canadian. You got the French in Quebec saying that they're Canadian. That's crazy. And an example of that, in Ontario specifically, but I believe it was BC was doing the same thing, or threatening to do the same thing as well, is I do have to give credit to Doug Ford. This was a good move on his port, on his part. He was going to get the LCBO to remove American alcohol from their stores. Now, this is such a big deal because, one, all alcohol in Ontario goes through the LCBO. No matter who it is, restaurant, now other companies, everything goes through the LCBO. So that's a really big deal to now have no American alcohol in Ontario at all, unless you like prohibition style smuggled it in. The LCBO is the largest seller of American alcohol. So for the LCBO to just go, nope, no more American alcohol, is a huge hit to the American alcohol industry. Where else are they going to sell it? So like that's a lot of money lost for these American companies. So I think that had a much bigger reason. You saw a lot of people talking about like buying Canadian, not buying American. I think if he is as smart as the Republican and MAGA supporters say that he is, then he should realize that, oh, this is going to have a large economic impact. And yeah, I think it's been pretty crazy. It's interesting seeing a lot of people who were like a little on the fence about who to vote for, then regretting it. But that's what happens. You got to live with your decision for the next 4 years. It's going to be crazy next 4 years, and I hope that it gets a little more tame. But it is what it is. Not much you can change about it. I'm glad that we got the tariffs paused. I hope that we can obviously not get the tariffs. But a lot of people talk about like why are we so dependent on the U.S. And I thought the same. And then I learned more about it. And the reason is that, one, Canada is really big, so it's difficult to sell something from the east to like the a port in the west. That's really difficult. As well as we're just like, it's much easier to drive trucks across the border with the U.S. and put stuff on ships and ship it to Europe or Asia or anything like that. And like our oil and energy and stuff like that, it's easier to transport to the U.S. Whether it's through like, if it's through pipes, it's easier to do through the U.S. because it's just closer. If you try to, like, Europe needs energy and they have been very dependent on Russian energy, and with the Russian-Ukrainian war, they've lost that energy and it's increased prices. What would be great is for Canada to sell our energy to Europe. But then that means that you have to build pipes across the Atlantic Ocean, which is really hard to do and expensive, and it would end up just not being worth it financially. So that's why, as well as Canada has tried to make deals in the past, we try to make a pipeline, I believe, from Alberta to Texas, and then the Americans like cut the deal and were like, no, we can't do this because people were complaining about it, like American citizens and voters were complaining about it. So then we were like, okay, we're gonna sell it to China then. And then the Americans were like, whoa, okay, we can't do the pipeline, but we'll up how much we're buying. And they basically shut us down and we weren't able to. So I think, I don't know, I think we kind of have to try, but it is difficult to do. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, especially with, we're going to have an election federally, and it's going to be interesting how that's going to happen. And as I said, it looks like Mark Carney is probably going to be the Liberal leader. Even polling wise, with Mark Carney predicted to be Liberal leader, he's actually beating Poilievre. And I mean, like, people don't like Poilievre. People like Poilievre because he's not Trump, or sorry, not, Justin Trudeau. They like him because he's not Justin Trudeau. They don't actually like him because he's Pierre Poilievre, and he doesn't have anything other than F Justin Trudeau. Like, he has no campaign other than screaming about Trudeau and complaining about him and saying about how bad he is and why Trudeau needs to get out of office. He doesn't have anything he can actually campaign or anything. So it's hilarious seeing him try to campaign like against Carney and against Freeland. Even though they're not yet the party leader, it's interesting and really funny to see him campaign against him, because his whole campaign is they're just like Justin. Like, you're not actually targeting or campaigning against them personally. You're campaigning against, oh, well, they're like Justin Trudeau, so you should still hate them because you hate Justin Trudeau. It's ridiculous, honestly. It's very amusing and funny to see. And him trying to come up with nicknames for them, Carbon Tax Carney, even though Mark Carney said that he's going to get rid of the carbon tax. It's very funny and interesting. So I'm excited to see how that'll play out, because I think it'll be wildly different, I think, their approaches to it. But respect to Polyev, he has been fairly anti-Trump, and it's been refreshing and nice to see, because I thought he was going to just lick the boot of Trump, but he hasn't. So I do respect him for that. But now to get to a man that I respect even more, that's with a bunch of sarcasm, is Doug Ford. Yeah, Doug Ford called an election in Ontario. It happened. It's finally happening. And I want to talk about a few things with it. First is, I think the most realistic thing that'll come out of this election is that Ford still wins, but gets a minority government. And I really hope at least that happens, because that means that then Ford has to play ball with the rest of the parties. He can no longer just do whatever he wants. And I think that's a large part of why I think it is insane that he called an election, is because he currently has a majority government. He can do whatever he wants. And his reason for calling this election is that he wants to secure the next 4 years so he can enforce his mandate. He has 2 years left. Like, he doesn't have to have an election now. He has 2 years left to enforce this mandate that he wants to. So why call an election now? Because he wants to make sure that he secures power for the next 4 years. It's not actually because he wants to make Ontario amazing or anything like that, or that he cares about Ontario. It's that he wants to make sure that he wins a majority government again, and he has that for the next 4 years. And that, again, leads into him making promises. Why is Ford campaigning and making promises right now for when he gets reelected? He's currently elected. He's currently in office. He's currently in power. Why is he making promises and saying that he's going to do stuff? Especially, again, because he has a majority government. He can do whatever he wants. Why is he making promises? I just saw him, he made an Instagram like promotional video about permanently cutting tax on gas, like gas that you put in your car. Why hasn't he done that now? He can do it now. Why are you campaigning and making that a campaign promise? It's ridiculous and frankly crazy that he's kind of going in this way. It's frustrating to see, and I really hope that voters kind of realize, like, oh hey, Ford has screwed Ontario. He hasn't done anything good. He hasn't cut taxes. He hasn't decreased spending. And all the scandals that he's been a part of, his phone records are trying to be released, but he's trying to fight against it because he did parliamentary business on his personal cell phone. Like, he texted people and called people on his personal cell phone, which is just ridiculous and insane. And I really hope that comes out soon before the election's over, so then people can see and hear that and go, oh, I don't actually want to vote for him. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I'm really... Honestly, I personally prefer Mart Stiles. I think the Ontario NDP have a pretty good campaign. Like, I think I agree more with what they say. But Bonnie Cromie's not bad. I think the problem for the NDP is that they have their base. And they have to support that base no matter what, otherwise they'll lose it. Whereas, like, the Liberals can kind of do and say whatever they want. They can say some center things, they can say some really far left things, they can say some right of center things, like policies and stuff like that, and they'll generally still get votes. They don't have a specific base that they have to get, but the NDP does. They have a pretty left-leaning base, which makes it hard for them to do or to propose any policy that would probably get them more votes. There was a video that I watched from a YouTuber called The Canadian Bagel. Sorry, the Great Canadian Bagel. And it was very interesting. I didn't watch the full video because it's 40 minutes long. And it's him looking at an electoral map. It's called Why the NDP is Failing, Ontario Election Forecast. And he has a little graph from, I don't know, does he have it linked in? Okay, it doesn't seem like he has it linked anywhere, but it's the ideological distribution of Canadians, and it's a little square, and it has goes from left is progressive, right is conservative, on cultural / social views, and then up is progressive and down is conservative on economy and role of government views. So basically, like, the more left you are, the more progressive you are on cultural and social views, and the more right you are, the more conservative you are on that, the more up you are on this little box, the more progressive you are towards the economy and the government being involved in the economy, and the further down you are, the more conservative you are about that. And what he kind of talks about is that the NDP used to be fairly towards like progressive economically and left culturally. But they were more in the center of it rather than where they are now, which is very far left cultural and socially. Now, the problem with that is because that's where the least amount of voters is. And I agree. I think that that is the problem with the NDP currently, is that they are too far left culturally, that it feels like too much for a lot of people. Whereas their economic policies, I really, really like Mart Style's economic policies. I think they're really good. But a lot of people, like conservatives, aren't going to want to vote for them. Even if the economic policies were amazing and exactly what conservatives wanted, they probably would still not vote for the NDP or the ONDP, because they're going to look at it and go, well, their social views are way too left. I don't agree with that. I don't want whatever it is. So I think that's a bit of a problem for them. And if they go back to where they originally were, I think it would be much better for them. And I don't know. I'm interested to see how the Ontario election works out. I'm interested to see if the Liberals are able to make a bit of a comeback, because they were like just kind of fell off for a bit. So I'm very interested to see what it's going to be like. Okay, I want to play a bit of what he says, because I think it'll be interesting to hear from him, because he does a lot of polling stuff. So I think it's interesting to hear and listen to what he says. And I'll obviously comment, because it's a video and this is obviously audio. So I'll comment on what he's showing. But I'm gonna play what he's saying, and then I think he'll be able to explain it better than I am. But I think this is very interesting and important to understand why Ontario is gonna vote the way it's gonna vote, and why I do think that the NDP is struggling a bit. I really respect Mart Salas and I like what she's doing, but I do think they are struggling a bit, and I think it's good and important to understand why and how.
A plurality of voters are socially conservative. There is 46% who are socially conservative, and there is 35% who are socially liberal, the rest being neutral.
Yeah, so when he says the rest being neutral, it's a square, and then there's a kind of smaller square of about like four different boxes in each corner, and then there's a plus that makes up the neutral. So yeah, like I said, like there's a lot more people that are culturally conservative than there are culturally progressive, which makes it difficult for like the NDP. I'll keep playing.
And then similarly on the economic issues, you have 56% who are economically progressive and 27% who are economically conservative. And people have confused these two positions. So you end up getting a lot of parties like the NDP or the Liberals catering to this part of the political spectrum in Canada.
So when he's talking about this part, he's talking about two of the lower parts of the economic and cultural, like, little squares. Two of the, I guess, the lower parts of the culturally progressive, and then two of the neutral parts. So what he's talking about is the people who are very culturally progressive and economically progressive, but that's a very small percentage of it. So it's 3%, 4%, 3%, 2%, 1%, and 3% of the percentage of people that voted in this or took part in this survey or polling. So that's a very small portion of the population that the Liberals, especially, I think, the NDP, are catering to.
Because they can't be fully over here. The finances just can't.
Fully over here is fully economically progressive. And he's going to talk about you just don't have enough money. it's just not financially possible to be, like, fully, fully economically progressive.
Support it. They just can't. The government can't do it. They will not get enough people to lend them money to do this. They can't have a deep enough deficit for long enough to do this. So they're campaigning.
Yeah, so, like, the government could be much more could be very economically progressive if they had a long enough time, because you'd have to be spending a lot of money up front, and especially this is a province, so it's not like a country where we would be able to get more funding from outside people. This is a province, so it's more difficult to get loans and money and stuff like that. But if given enough time, you could probably make it work, but you're not going to get, like he said, enough people to vote for you to keep you in power for that long. And you're not going to get enough money to actually be able to do it effectively. So if in a world we elected in a party that was just fully focused on being extremely economically progressive, they would be voted out in 4 years and would not be able to spend enough money to do it right, and would then be basically just wasting money because you have so many different things you need to do. You are going to be investing in, like, let's say, full public health care, like completely removing privatization at all, making it fully public so the government pays for all that, making it so like funding essential services, education, roads, stuff like that, and then also being more involved in business and helping and supporting businesses. Probably that's more looking towards small businesses and supporting financially them rather than big businesses. But then that also means that you're probably going to be taxing big business more, and you're also going to be taxing citizens more. And you can kind of see it just doesn't make financial sense. So that's kind of what he's talking about when he's saying that.
Usually in this vicinity, depending on the party.
So like the one before, where it's pretty much the worst place to be trying to campaign.
Depending on the election. And that is one of the thinnest, least populated portions of the graph.
Yeah, so like I said, there's not a lot of people there. There's not a lot of people that are pretty far on the economic progressive spectrum and cultural progressive spectrum. You might have, looking at this, you have more people who are economically progressive and culturally conservative. So there's people who want economic progressiveness but don't want cultural progression. And that's like kind of the choosing both is kind of the worst. You're better to be able to choose just one generally, or it's easier to kind of just choose one. Even being just kind of a little culturally progressive and a little, culturally conservative isn't like the best, cause it's when you're trying to do best of both worlds, it doesn't really work out very well.
I of the electorate. One of the thinnest sections of voters is roughly fiscally neutral and socially liberal. They're socially progressive. Historically, though, the NDP was closer to here.
Okay, so when he's saying here, he's talking about an area between economic and cultural progressive and more, like a little more conservative, but like in the middle of being economically progressive and conservative. So not being like too far left, but also not being too far right.
Slightly economically progressive, sorry, socially progressive, only slightly, but very economically progressive.
Yeah, so, sorry, I got mixed up as well. Yeah, basically being very economically progressive, but only slightly socially progressive, which the NDP has now campaigned on, is that they are very culturally progressive and that they do believe in like all of these different things, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, but it is a bad thing because it has hindered their ability to actually be elected and to be able to do these things that they want to do. And I think that is a really big thing, that they have campaigned too hard on being progressively, being culturally progressive, that it has scared away a lot of people who would in fact vote for them. And it's interesting.
So going from over here to over here doesn't seem like a very big change, but if you look at the area that is drawn by these squares, you go from a 12% core base to a 20% core base just by moving four squares. And that's the difference from being slightly socially liberal but very economically progressive to being very socially liberal and only slightly economically progressive. And that's the change the party's done.
Yeah, so I kind of just reiterating, like I think that is a bad decision on their part to make, because I think the liberals are able to get kind of everybody because they don't have to be left. They can be center. They can even be slightly center right sometimes. They can also be center left. They can also be very left. By not really, like, by not only trying to get your core base and by like kind of bending at the will of your core base, it allows the liberals to kind of be all over the place, which gets them a lot of votes. But the NDP is so is only able to focus on getting their core base. They have to make sure that they are happy before they're able to do anything else. And if they say or do anything that slightly goes against their base, then they get outrage. And I think that is a problem for the NDP and why they're not more popular. Because when you think of the NDP, you don't think of fiscally progressive. You think of culturally progressive. You think about, like, it's disappointing, because I think if they focused more on being fiscally progressive, then I think, like they said, they would have a better chance.
Because the party realizes they can't be here. Policies on this line are not possible in 2025 Canada.
What he's talking about is like being fully economically progressive. Like that's not reasonable or possible at all. Again, like I already said, don't have the funds, and people would probably generally end up voting you out.
They were possible in 1960 Canada. They're not possible today. So they can't be up here. They just can't govern there. And lying to your voters is worse than trying to just offer them more lukewarm policies. But the correct or better decision would have been to say, go here.
And then when he's talking about go here, is being in the progressively or economic progressive and a little culturally progressive. Not super culturally progressive, but a little. And I think currently the reason people are so against being culturally progressive is because life moves really, really fast. And it's not just culturally, being culturally progressive. It's with technology as well, which I have a whole disagreements. I don't know, whatever. I have a bit of a hatred to like tech companies and the tech industry currently, because they want to move too fast and act like if they aren't creating some groundbreaking new thing and we just sit and explore the technology we currently have, that they're going to lose all their money and that the world's going to be doomed. And I think a lot of people feel like that culturally as well, is that things move really, really fast. And I think it is good that things are moving fast, because, yeah, it means that people are getting treated properly in the way that they deserve to be treated. They should be treated correctly. Like, gay marriage should be a thing. It is now, but people still shouldn't be persecuted and attacked and made fun of because they're gay or like a part of LGBTQ, and like racism and stuff like that. But I think a lot of people feel like it moves too fast. It's too progressive. And I think that is what really, really hinders the NDP and more left-leaning parties and stuff like that, is that they focus too much on being super culturally progressive, which I think a lot of people think are a lot of people, but it's just because they're really loud on like social media. Like if you go outside, I think a lot of people are going to be fairly slightly left culturally, or they're going to be more conservative culturally. And I think slowing down a little bit, like it's difficult. Slowing down would be good because then you would get people more comfortable with it. But at the same time, you should just get it over with and just do it, because it is the right thing to do. So it's very, very difficult. Politics isn't an easy thing. Yeah, I think it's, I don't know, it's difficult, but I think that's why the NDP have been hindered.
Instead, they went more socially liberal. And that is a thinner part of the graph, because these four squares, again, that's 18%, this is 12%. So this is a much denser part of the graph. This is a less dense part of the graph. But you don't even need to use sophisticated polling or more complicated data modeling like that. You can just go a more natural thing. What is a farming community? Communitarian?
But okay, and I was going to be talking about a bunch of other stuff. We don't need to talk about that. But I want to find the website, so then I can say, okay, Abacus Data is where he got this from. I'd highly recommend go checking it out. I know I probably did a fairly bad job of explaining it, but once you see the graph is very interesting, and once you see it, you'll be able to better understand what I was trying to explain. Yeah, I think it is going to be a bit of a struggle for the NDP, and I think generally, the NDP, if they do want to win provincially or federally, they need to change and think about, where do people actually vote? Where are they going to be getting their votes? Because it's easy to listen to the outrage online, but when people actually go to vote, we saw in the U.S., you know, you have a bunch of people who online talk about wanting to vote Democrat, whatever. But then Trump won the Electoral College and the popular vote. So clearly it wasn't all that. yeah, I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see. And I hope they do well. I really do. It would be awesome to see Mark Stiles as premier and to get an NDP government in Ontario, but I don't know if I see it happening. But I think the best thing for Ontario is to no longer have Doug Ford. Because again, if you want to know more in depth about the parties and Doug Ford and everything, go watch listen to the very first episode. That's where I talked about all this. And I haven't re-listened to it, obviously, but it's still all very relevant information. I explain why Doug Ford is not good, and I talk about all the other parties and stuff like that. But it's similar to like the Greens, why the Green Party will never win, because their only focus is the environment. And I think it's a good thing. I think it's good to have a sole focus and that they're solely focusing on the environment, but they don't campaign and act like they want to win. the NDP campaign and act like they want to win an election. Jagmeet Singh wants to be prime minister. Martin Sales wants to be premier. So they have to think more about who is going to get, or how are they going to get the votes? Who is actually going to vote for them? Because we don't have enough parties to form coalitions and like alliances and stuff like that. You see a lot of European parliaments have tons and tons and tons of parties. So you can focus more on individual like priorities and stuff like that. But Canada doesn't have that. We have one conservative party. I mean, we have the PPC, but they're crazy. They have no one cares about them after COVID. But I mean, that's an example though. The PPC, their whole campaign was, oh, we don't like masks and vaccines, and if we get elected, we'll stop it. Okay, well, nobody cares about masks and vaccines anymore, and the people that do are insane. So nobody really votes for them anymore. You don't hear or talk about them at all. So the Conservatives only have one party, and so they're able to sweep everybody on the right. The Liberals are very center, so they're able to get pretty much anyone. The NDP is very left. You already have the Liberals there that are going to be getting some very left people, some center left people, some center people. The only people that the NDP can get is, oh no, the left leaning or like fairly left leaning people. The Greens will just get people that care about the environment. But if the NDP played more like the Liberals and moved just slightly closer to the center, I think they have a pretty good chance at winning. Because a lot of people don't want to vote for Conservative or Liberal. But then they look at the NDP and they go, oh, they're too far left. I can't vote for them. So then they have to vote for Liberal or Conservative. So I'm very, very, very excited to see how it'll happen, how it'll turn out. I'm very excited to be able to vote for the first time. Make sure to go out and vote. It's amazing. One of the best things you can do for your country. even though sometimes it does suck, but I'll see how my experience is with it. But yeah, that's going to be it for this episode. I hope you did enjoy. And make sure to tune in. Well, I guess I can't really say next week because anyways, tune in next time for the next episode. And I hope you all enjoyed. Thank you for listening.